Welcome back, everyone, to Disruptive Adventism. Today, we're going to have an interview with Wandile Ntiane. He is in South Africa right now, and he is accompanying us to talk about the projects or the idea of community development and why is it important as Adventists we engage in this space. So we have Wandile. It's a little bit later over there in South Africa. How's it going?
I'm doing good, man. Thank you for having me.
No, thanks for taking the time. I know it's a little bit later over there than it is right here in the United States, but we really appreciate that you're taking the time to be interviewed and to, you know, kind of take the time to share a little bit about your ideas about community development and some of the projects that you're involved in over there. So before we kind of get started into the topic, help the audience understand, who are you and what are you doing right now?
My name is Wandile Ntiane. I am from Durban, South Africa. I am the founder and CEO of Ubuntu Design Group, which is an organization that believes that if apartheid architecture could segregate and oppress, then community-led design or Ubuntu architecture can bring people together. So basically what we're doing is we're designing and building meaningful homes and communities that are enabling opportunities for families to self-sustain, but also enabling people to come together and grow together.
Now, what's your background when it comes to some of this project that you're doing? What is some of your background? What have you been working on before starting this project?
Well, before starting this project, I was studying architecture at Andrews University. And having grown up in South Africa in different townships and informal settlements, I'd learned, you know, the importance of design and how much impact having design places could have in communities. And I'd seen sort of the devastating impact, that lasting impacts that were created by apartheid architecture, that even though apartheid ended 24 years ago, you know, the communities are still segregated. And one, some communities are designed for failure, and that's what's happening, and others are designed for success just due to people's skin color. So I've always sort of grown up with this motivation of wanting to use that same vehicle of architecture to change that and design communities that enable everyone to thrive and be successful. So I studied architecture at Andrews University, just graduated in my master's in architecture this past May. During my architecture education, that's when I started Ubuntu. And we've since built a home for a family that's lived in a shack. It's a family living with disability. And the home is handicap accessible. It has a commercial component attached to it. So the family is now living in a dignified home. They're running a daycare out of their home so that they can sustain themselves financially, because we believe providing someone with a home does not take them out of poverty, but designing a home that enables economic opportunities, enables them to come out of poverty, also impacting the community that they live in.
You mentioned this idea of design pre and post apartheid was still segregating communities. Someone that maybe has never been to South Africa, I have never been there, so I may not understand, what were some of the architectural choices, the design choices that kind of enabled this segregation and this impoverishment of peoples? And well, on the flip side, how are you changing that? What is unique about this design that you're implementing?
So during apartheid, there was a Land Areas Act which segregated communities based on race. And so they pushed all the majority, which is the black people, into, you know, unproductive land, and they created townships. And there was something called the 40-40 rule, where they would create a township with black people 40 kilometers away from the city center. And it was designed to sort of be like working barracks. And they would build a 40 square meter house for the people living there. And then what that did was it would force the family to spend 40% of their income commuting back and forth to town where they worked for the apartheid government. So what implication this had was it forced families to be dependent on their oppressors or the apartheid government, which then made it impossible for them to grow economically and to grow their homes that they live in. And these homes were designed in such a way that it was hard for them to add on and grow. And also they designed these communities without, you know, gathering places or economic opportunities, because again, they wanted to have all the majority black people to be dependent on the apartheid government. And also gathering spaces would have political implications for them as people would come together and maybe protest. So some 24 years post-apartheid, you still have those townships, you still have the city center, you still have most of the, you know, jobs in the city centers, and you still have, you know, way less jobs within the communities where black people live. So, you know, people are still spending 40% of their income commuting to work every day. So what I'm trying to do with Ubuntu Design Group is use that same vehicle which was used to segregate and oppress, which is architecture, to change that and enable opportunities and create economic places within the township gathering places, whilst also creating dignified homes for people living in slums and shanty towns, etc.
How exactly are you changing that? And I mean, you're talking about the idea of development, right? Changing, using the same vehicle that was used to oppress people back in the apartheid era. And how are you changing that narrative? Like, you know, how are you incorporating design as a medium to help people who have been disenfranchised for so long?
I think what's important is, you know, for me to acknowledge that even though these places were designed for destruction, over the years, people have already been developing their places to enable these type of opportunities, from informal sector trading to little parks that they've created outside their front yard. So I think the first step to, you know, addressing such a systemic problem is to look at what people are already doing. And I call this in the Ubuntu design process, listening to build. So sort of getting a grasp of how people are already solving the problem, interviewing them, working with them, living within the area, and then in understanding that, to work with the community to come up with meaningful solutions that work with them in redesigning those places and creating those gathering spaces, creating the economic opportunities. And then through working, letting the community be the lead architect of the future of the area that they live in, you are then able to successfully come up with a master plan that will enable opportunities, growth, and dignified housing. Because that's the opposite of what the apartheid government did. What they did was they didn't consult anyone. They just came and imposed. So in order for you to undo that, you've got to consult the communities, understand the culture, the context, the shared values, and work with them in designing a community that's meaningful, that's beautiful, and that works for them.
To me, something that, as you were sharing that with us, something that really came to my mind was the way in which missions from Western countries is done into other parts of the world. Mm-hmm. And by Western, I mean American or European, you know, missions that are done and go into, like, quote unquote, what we call third world countries. But of course, mm-hmm. that is not proper terminology. It's just developing countries or countries that are, you know, maybe have been disenfranchised in the past and mm-hmm. communities. But something that really came to my mind was how can we, like, you know, I mean, usually I hear about a lot of people that want to go on mission trips, right?
Yeah.
And they want to go and build a school or build a church or maybe help the community or bring people out outside of poverty, maybe dump a lot of resources into them. But you mentioned the idea of involving the community in the process instead of just coming here with like a savior complex of development. Oh, look at us. Like, you know, we're Americans, we have a lot of money and we're going to bring. It seems to me that you're trying to make the community actually be part of the process. How has that worked out?
No, I think it is important to understand that when you come in with that mentality and you come in with the handout mentality, not only are you destroying the community, but also you are devaluing the community. You are stripping away, you're stripping them away of their dignity. In a way, you're creating a mini apartheid. I think within the Adventist culture, there's an organization that does, you know, similar work where they come into places and just build stuff, right? And it's usually made up of inexperienced people who just so happen to have $2,000 to fly down to a poor African country to build stuff. I remember I was in Zimbabwe for high school, and they came in and they built some tin roof classroom. Mind you, all our other classrooms are made of bricks, and they are plastered and painted, and they look beautiful. But they, these people flew in from Canada and America on tickets worth $2,000 each, and came and built a shack out of tin roof and called it one-day classrooms and one-day churches, etc. So what happened was, as soon as they left, the one-day classroom was too hot to use during the summer and too cold during the winter, because no context was looked at, no climate wasn't looked at. It was just, you know, a shack that was built. And then it was puzzling to me, because when I look at the amount of money that was used for them just traveling and accommodating them, they could have been able to build a very dignified classroom, a very dignified church, and that could have hired local people, local contractors, and made an even more tremendous impact. But, you know, because of your Facebook and Twitter and Instagram celebrity status, you have all these young people come in to take selfies next to this shack and then go back feeling good about themselves. I think that's a problem, you know, and I think that's what destroys communities instead of enabling them and building them. Because what you're saying to these people is, you know better, you're going to come and do what you know is right, and then you're going to leave. So their input doesn't really matter, even though they're going to live there, they're going to use that classroom, and this is their community. It's a colonial approach. In fact, it's a colonial approach, which has historically been used, you know, to colonize countries, etc. I think we still use it even within our mission, unfortunately.
The example that you just shared is literally heartbreaking to me, because it really shows, and I've seen this happen in other countries. You know, I myself, I'm from another country. I'm not from the United States. And I do remember missionaries coming into my country, into Nicaragua. And, you know, they were building these, you know, classrooms and schools and such, which were helpful. I mean, to a certain degree, they were helpful. But at the same time, like, once I look at it now, like, you know, at the time, I think we were happy, maybe, because it was like, oh, you know, we have a place now. Like, we have something to kind of work with. Yeah. But after years and years, like, you know, the design just didn't reflect the community. And I don't want to come across, I don't think, like, you know, a lot of people will say, like, oh, how ungrateful, how, like, you know, you're not being grateful to the ideas or to the contributions that other people are coming. But, like, you know, when you put it into that perspective of, you know, let's say 10 people go into South Africa, or maybe to another African country, Asian country, whatever you have, and they spend $2,000 on the ticket to get there. You know, if those 10 people put those $2,000, $20,000, and hire local people, I think there will be much more achieved. Like you're saying, like, you know, like you're expressing that hiring the local people and making them involved is the solution to this development of the community. It just baffles me how we are still kind of thinking that this foreign missions can be helpful when we just do it once upon a time. I think maybe another component to kind of balance the conversation would be to go to the same place for an extended period of time. Like, let's say a church connects with another church in South Africa or, you know, any other country, but they just continue going there and build relationships, build friendships, send resources, but it's just one place instead of, like you say, trying to go and take different Facebook selfies or Twitter or Instagram and just put them just because I've been here and I've been there. So I really resonate with what you're saying, because I definitely have seen it firsthand. And how have you done, I mean, you have Ubuntu, and how have you done this? How have you made sure to involve the community and not kind of take this quote unquote colonial approach?
I'll start by saying I'm okay with being ungrateful for help that's more destructive than helpful to my community. Mm. I can't be grateful for something that's destroying my community. So I'm okay with that. And then, well, Ubuntu is a Zulu word or Zulu concept that means I am because you are, or I am because we are, and we are because he is. So inherently, in the mantra of what we stand for is this idea that everyone has a God-given intrinsic value. So we never put, you know, pen on paper without consulting the people that we're designing for. So we make the communities the lead architects of the places that they live in. So yeah, I guess that's my answer, that we let the communities drive the design process. We don't come in with preconceived notions on what works best there, because most of the time we're not from there and we're not going to live in there.
What are some of the shaping? Because I mean, I assume that you come and, you know, you've studied architecture. You have been, you know, maybe you understand more of the technical side, and maybe someone wants something different than what you envision. How has it been a learning experience for you to kind of submit to whatever the community desires instead of like your preconceived ideas or knowledge that, you know, you may have just in your heart, not necessarily that you're bringing, but how has that shaped you?
That's a good question. Humility, bro. You know, like, you taught, you know, one thing in architecture school, but maybe that doesn't necessarily work at that particular community. There's a certain way that works best, that's culturally contextual, and you got to submit to that way and make it work. And that's, you know, the major job of being an architect, problem solving and enabling things to work and designing to make it work. So yeah, I think the key is to be humble and listen to the community. You got to put the community above yourself.
That's hard. I mean, for me, that's hard to think, but it's so important. I think in my line of work as well, like, you know, the spiritual line of work that I'm working with, and like, you know, even here doing the podcast, I think that's something that I also have learned, you know, like you say, putting the community first is so important. And that's why listening to others is crucial, you know, to kind of bring positive results. How has the community reacted? I mean, when you're developing these plans, and now that you guys have completed a part of the project, how has the community reaction has been? Positive, like, you know, kind of encouraging to bring more? What are they, what are you guys envisioning for the future?
I think it's been really exciting to see, you know, go-go's or like the old ladies from the community, and them coming to us and saying, hey, you know, emotional and saying, you know, this is the first time ever that we've ever been consulted on the development of our own community. You know, we've just seen things happening, but for the first time, we are actually at the forefront of how we want to shape our community. So that's been beautiful to see. And it's been beautiful to see young people who are also part of the design process saying, hey, I never envisioned my community to be like this. You know, now I see what's possible. And I think that's the beauty of what we're doing. Another thing which has been really impactful is we had a rich, you know, private prep school reach out to us and say, hey, we'd love to donate and fundraise for the next home. And now you see, you know, white students are fundraising, running marathons to donate so that a family with other kids on the other side of the track could have a home. And I was at Andrews and this was happening. And Jamie Black, one of the, you know, students from this school who was at the forefront of this fundraiser, she was in grade 6 at the time. She went and with her family on Christmas to spend the day with the family that we were fundraising for. And this was one of the most beautiful things I've ever seen. And that goes to show Ubuntu, this concept of I am, because we are sort of bridging and healing the apartheid wounds and bridging the gap. And it was an unintended, you know, impact, because we didn't come there to necessarily bring people across different races, but it happened. And that was beautiful. And 2019, a lot of exciting things we have planned. We're looking to create a micro mortgage for low income families that do not currently qualify for any bond or mortgage, and work with banks and work with schools like the private school and other institutions willing to fundraise and donate. and work with them in designing and building dignified homes for low-income families, but also we're looking to design communities and everything that has impact, that's impact-driven, that will enable and enhance low-income communities. That's what we'll be focusing on. And people can look at our website to see how they can get involved by either adopting a home, being a part of a project, etc.
You mentioned finances, you know, and that's a very important, I mean, money moves the world to a certain degree, sadly. I mean, well, people move the world. That's the reality, but money is a bigger, big factor. Have you guys, has that been one of the main struggles in your development for the community and your project?
Oh, definitely. Definitely. You know, this has made me realize how important, you know, money is in any development. So basically, we sort of put our pencils down and said, okay, we have the drawing unlocked, we have the design process unlocked. Now, how can we come up with a sustainable business model that will enable us to scale and impact more families without struggling? So we've now come up with this idea of a micro mortgage where we partner with financial institutions and different surety partners who are going to underwrite the mortgages. And we work with entrepreneurial families. So each home we work with, it's a family that's entrepreneurial, and each home will have a commercial space. And they're going to use that commercial space to pay off that mortgage over a period of 10 to 15 years. And that then enable us to build more homes and scale in that regard.
That's awesome to hear. I think that's very important. I mean, you and I both know that funding helps. And you mentioned that the website, right? There is a website that people can go to. Explain to us, what are some of the platforms that people can go and help the community? Like, you know, maybe, like you say, adopt a home or other things. How can we find you? Clarify that for our audience.
So I get, you know, we still have a crowdfunding plug on our website. Because again, Ubuntu means I am because you are, we are because he is. So we want to keep this idea of community, global Ubuntu coming together to enable a family to have a dignified home. Because we believe, you know, a home is the basis for sustainability. If you have a home, then you can have an address to look for a job. If you have a home, then you can, you know, go on to look for education. You have a place to, kids have a place to do homework, et cetera, et cetera. So whether it's an institution, an individual, a school, they're able to contribute towards us building the next home that a family would be able to have a dignified home, but also a commercial space for them to impact the community, but also to pay it forward through the monthly mortgage payment.
That's great. I think that's awesome. An awesome way to contribute. Now, as I said, I wanted you to kind of tell us where to find you. Like, you know, if somebody wants to be in contact with you, what's the website, the specific website that one needs to go and type and go through the GoFundMe or anything? What's the name? Is it Ubuntu Project Design?
Mm-hmm. So if you want to catch us, go to ubuntudesigngroup.com. That's our website, and all the information is in there. And you know, we have our own sort of crowdfunding plug that's in there that you'll be able to plug into via PayPal and different ways. You can follow me just to see the progress of things going on Instagram at onedelay7. And then we also have a Facebook page, Ubuntu Design Group, and an Instagram page, Ubuntu Design Group.
Awesome. Good to know. As we start closing out the podcast, one more thing that I would like to kind of know is, like, I watched the documentary that you guys produced in order to kind of showcase a little bit of the Ubuntu project. How can people find that? And another thing that I would like you to kind of like chime in is, what are some of the bigger personal projects that you have for the future? I think I saw a couple of weeks ago you shared you're part of the TEDx 100, I think, something like that.
Yeah, so that's exciting, bruh. We're doing a lot of things. We're publishing a book next year called Ubuntu in Ubumbulu that's going to be talking about our revolutionary design process and how we're using architecture as a vehicle to enhance communities. So definitely check, you know, be on the lookout for that. Having our film Child of Apartheid, which also talks about our work for the past 3 years, that's going to be at the Durban International Film Festival in July, and it will be on different international film festivals over the next 2 years. So definitely look out for that. I am part of the TEDx Johannesburg Fellows in celebration of the 100 years of Nelson Mandela's legacy. So I should be doing a personal TED Talk on the work that we're doing in the coming months. So if you follow us on social media, you'll be able to, you know, get a first peek at that. So that's the main things that we're doing. But we'll also be doing, you know, different talks in different places. I think I'll be at Oxford in April, and just other places. So just if you follow us on our website and our social media, you'll be able to catch us in different places.
That sounds incredible to me. I think definitely you're being very blessed, like, you know, and all the support that you're getting from the community and from, you know, the online space as well. Like, you know, I mean, I think that's amazing that you're able to share. And it seems like you have your hands full for this year, like, you know, and for the next ones to come as well. And I'm really excited to see how the project develops. But our time kind of has been running out, and we've been really glad to talk to you, and kind of like you are sharing some ideas about Ubuntu and about the project, the design, the importance of putting the community first. And I think that when it comes to the topic of community development, that is very, very crucial and very important. As is our tradition in our show, Disruptive Adventism, we like to give the final word to our guests. So give us the final word on Ubuntu and community development.
I mean, I think maybe a lot of young people are listening to this show and thinking to themselves, they want to change the world, they want to make a difference, and how. And, you know, when we talk about it in retrospect, it sounds easy, but, you know, in reality, it's a lot of struggle. And I think people will be able to understand that when they watch our film and maybe read our book. But I would say, I guess, in the words of Nelson Mandela, it always seems impossible until it's done. And I think true Christianity is to go out and serve your neighbors, and to go out and make a difference in your community and just the community around the world. And I think that's the greatest example that Jesus showed whilst he was here on earth. He was constantly out healing people, helping people, and doing all sort of miracles to enhance and alleviate pain and poverty. So I think it's come upon us as people to go out and make a difference in the world.
Thank you for listening today. We appreciate that you have taken the time to listen to our podcast and ask that you share it with others. Please leave a review on iTunes or your favorite podcasting app. If you're enjoying our content, we want to invite you to consider contributing to our cause by becoming a patron, where you will receive exclusive content, have the ability to sit down with the Disruptive Adventism team, and ask relevant questions for Adventism and society. If you're interested in contributing, head to patreon.com/disruptiveadventism. Another avenue for contribution is to purchase our merchandise through Amazon or tpublic.com. You can find the links to our merchandise on our Facebook or Instagram pages. We also hope that our content has intrigued you a little bit, and that you decide to stay around for future podcasts. If you have any comments, feedback, or a topic you would like us to discuss, please go to our website at www.disruptiveadventism.org or shoot us an email to disruptiveadventism@gmail.com. We're eager to engage in discussions about any matter, so don't hesitate to contact us. This has been it for today. We hope you join us next time. And as always, we invite you to be disruptive.